brought to you by Penguin.
A Possible Life, a novel in five parts by Sebastian Foakes. Part 1, A Different Man, read by Samuel West. Part 2, The Second Sister, read by Christian Rodsker. Part 3, Everything Can Be Explained, read by Lucy Briers. Part 4, A Door into Heaven, read by Sean Thomas. Part 5, You Next Time, read by Rupert Degas.
Part 1, A Different Man. Geoffrey Talbot was supposed to be a linguist, but spent most of his time at university playing games. He appeared twice for the first 11 at cricket, but was not selected for the match at Lord's, where his place was taken by Tiny Trembuth, a slab of a man already on Lancashire's books. At rugby, Geoffrey's headlong tackling in college games had earned him a game for the university itself against Rosslyn Park. But at Twickenham, the man chosen at open side wing forward was a graduate Rhodesian. It was no surprise to Geoffrey that he fell twice at the last. His Hampshire day school had told the pupils that their place in life would be the middle rank. Geoffrey's father worked as a jobber on the London Stock Exchange, and hoped that Geoffrey, with his knowledge of languages, might one day go into the diplomatic service. Geoffrey's mother, who came from Limoges, had no ambition for Geoffrey. Her main interest was in dog breeding, and the family house near Twyford Down was home to generations of yapping dachshunds. After graduation, Geoffrey went to see the University Appointments Board, where a man with a pipe gave him some brochures from Shell and Imperial Tobacco. "You're a personable fellow," he said. "I should think you'd do well in industry." "What about the diplomatic service?" "They won't mind your sportsman's tutu. Won't even ask. But their own exam can be tricky." In September 1938, after a series of rebuffs, Geoffrey found himself at a boys' preparatory school in Nottinghamshire, where he was to teach French, Latin, and elementary maths. He had been interviewed by the headmaster in London at the offices of an educational agency, and hired on the spot. The taxi from the station drove through the outskirts of a mining town before the road opened up on some hills of oak and beech as they neared the village of Crampton. The school was set on high ground that overlooked a fast-flowing tributary of the Trent. It was a building whose elevated position and solitary brick tower gave it a commanding aspect. The grey stones were covered in creepers, and the stone-mullioned windows held leaded lights. The headmaster's wife, Mrs. Little, showed him upstairs to his quarters. She was a woman in her 60s who smelled of lavender water and peppermints. "It's not a large room," Mrs. Little said, "but bachelors can't be choosers. The boys come back tomorrow, but there'll be tea in the dining hall today at 6. You can meet your colleagues. After tea, you have to forage for yourself. We don't allow drink on the premises, though the head won't mind if you occasionally go down to the Whitby Arms." The room had a small sash window with a view towards a wooded park. There was a chest, a shallow built-in cupboard with a hanging rail, a standing bookcase of four shelves, and a single bed. When the house had belonged to a wealthy family, Geoffrey thought, this would have been a maid's bedroom. The shape of it seemed somehow to dictate the sort of life he would lead. The bookcase would need filling, and the evening sun would help him read in the armchair with its loose floral cover. He would send for his old books from university, and might even get round to the plays of Schiller and Racine. Presumably there would also be a lending library in the town. He had never imagined he would be a schoolmaster, but he felt the role settle onto his shoulders as easily as the black gown he hung up on the door. His interview with the headmaster of Crampton Abbey had been brief. Captain Little, a tall, grey-haired man whose horn-rimmed glasses had one blacked-out lens, had made it clear that Geoffrey's principal job was to improve the performance of the sports teams. "The parents do expect us to win a few matches, you know," he said. "It's more than 20 years since we beat Bearwood Hall at anything." After Geoffrey had unpacked his single suit and spare tweed jacket, he decided to go for a walk in the grounds. Beneath an oak tree next to the cricket pitch, he came across a wooden bench with the inscription J.D. Farmington, 1895 to 1915. The Battle of Loos, he thought.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?